By the way, you could tell him he doesn't have to wear his hat.
Kof Zayin Sivan, Sunday the 10th of June, Rabbi Professor Avram Steinberg, Issues of Mila and Modern Medicine. This week's Torah Away has been sponsored by Ilan Nishmas, Rev Zev, Ben Rev Dov, Zichron Levocha, Dr. W. Littlestone, whose sixth Yalt site is today.
Good morning, everyone. As we all know, Bris Mila is one of the mitzvahs that many brises were related to it because of the uniqueness of the mitzvah, and there was throughout the generations one of the mitzvahs that there was a mesiras nefesh in order to fulfill it. Currently, we just conducted a survey in Israel recently, and 98% of males, of Jewish males in Israel, are circumcised. And that is without any legislation, without police, without any other means to force to do it. So it's really the mitzvah that is followed by the most of any other mitzvahs that we can think of. So it's really a unique situation concerning bris. However, modern medicine in recent years created some challenges to halacha related to a few issues concerning bris mila. As time will permit, I'll discuss a few of those and we'll see how things go around nowadays. So let me start with the issue of metzitza. As we all know, the primary mitzvah of bris is krisas u'orla. You have to cut the orla and priya. Chazal added a third aspect of the bris, and that's metzitza. And the Gemara says in Shabbos that metzitza is done because of a skone to the nimol. If you don't do the metzitza, then there might be a skana to the baby, and that is the pshat in the Gemara, that's why you have to do metzitza after you did the bris. The Gemara goes even further to say that a moyel who doesn't do metzitza, because he endangers the life of the baby, one has to fire him, and he is not allowed to do brisn anymore because he did avoid the metzitza, which is life-saving for the baby. If that would be the only reason, it poses a factual problem because we know today that not only isn't there any skone by not doing metzitza, but perhaps there is a skone by doing the metzitza, from what medicine knows today. In fact, we do many operations, minor or major, and it's unheard of that a surgeon, after he does a hernia operation or an appendix that he takes out, he's doing a metzitza in order to avoid a skone after this procedure. So why in a bris you have to do it to avoid a skone? What is the skana if you don't do metzitza? So we don't understand it, but if Chazal said it's a skana, so we ought to follow it and do it. Sucking the blood. Now, according to the Kabbalah, there are other reasons why metzitza has to be performed. So that even if we would say that nishtanu atvoim, and nowadays the nature has changed to a degree that metzitza is not anymore regarded as a skona if you don't do it, there are other reasons to do it. So throughout the last maybe 100-150 years, there were a lot of opposing views against metzitza by medical establishments, by governments. There was a big tumult around this issue. The Zdech Emet has a whole kuntres on all these fights against the establishments that wanted to annul the Metzitza altogether. I'm not talking how. First of all, the mere fact that you do a Metzitza. So if the government were opposed to the mere fact that you need to do Metzitza, all poskim were opposed to it, because according to Chazal it's a skone, and even if it's not a skone, there are other reasons to do it, and Metzitza has to be done. So, Baruch Hashem, we overcame this this problem, and nowadays, the mere fact that you do Metzitza is usually not challenged. The challenge today is how to do the Metzitza. So obviously in the days of Chazal and the Shoinim, the Metzitza was done by peh, was done by mouth. The Moel would put his mouth on the area of the Mila and suck by power, and that was how Metzitza was done. That created an additional question from a medical point of view, because the mouth has a lot of bacteria and it may infect an open wound, and it's unheard of that a surgeon would put his mouth into a surgical site where he did an operation. The fact is that we hardly see any bacterial infection, even if it's done bepeh, and already the Chassam Sofer said that the mitzvah is magina umatzila, otherwise we can't understand how you apply a mouth full of bacteria and yet there are no bacterial infections usually in the wound. But recently it was found out that moalim who are carriers of a virus that is called herpes may transmit the herpes to the baby. Now herpes can be very dangerous. It can cause an infection of the brain, meningitis, encephalitis, and even cause death to the baby. And if it's not so severe, it may become a chronic infection that will go on through life for this baby with all kinds of infecting vesicles that are around the areas where it was done. And if the moel is doing mitzitza bepeh, he may transmit the herpes. That is the current opposition to do mitzitza bepeh. Now there is a famous story in the days of the Chassam Sofer, where his Talmid, the Yad Elozor, who was the rabbi of Vienna, apparently a moel who did mitzitza bepeh then in Vienna caused tuberculosis to the baby, and he was accused as transmitting the tuberculosis to the baby by doing mitzitza bepeh, and therefore it was suggested to do mitzitza bekli, not to apply the mouth directly on the wound, but have a tube that one side of the tube is applied to the area of the bris and the other side to the mouth of the moel, and then he sucks the blood. So if the whole idea is sucking the blood, then b'shfoferet, with a tool, it's okay. You achieve the same purpose. Some even say that you may achieve it better than doing it by mouth, because the vacuum and the suction may be even stronger. But if Metzitza bepeh is how Metzitza has to be done, then you violated the way you do Metzitza. And that created a major machloikes amongst the Achroinim, whether you are fulfilling the commandment to do Metzitza even if you're not doing it by mouth. So the famous story in Vienna was that this rabbi there, Rav Horvitz, the Yad Elozor, turned to his Rebbe, to the Chassam Sofer, and said, we have a problem, they will ask us to stop doing Mila altogether, we may lose the whole mitzvah if we'll continue to do it bepeh, and can we do it with a tool, with a tube? So the Chassam Sofer wrote to him a tshuva, that it's a horror show, if you won't do it, you'll lose more than you gain, and there's no issue to do it with a tube, because only according to the Kabbalah you have to do bepeh, but we don't pass according to Kabbalah. By Nigle, it doesn't look like the reason to do the metzitza should be different if you do it bepeh or bekli, and therefore he allowed it. Interestingly, that this tshuva was never published in the Chassam Sofer himself. It was published in Yad Elozor, the tshuvas of his Talmud from Vienna, and he brings the tshuva of the Chassam Sofer. So those who say that metzitza bekli with a tube is okay, quote the Chassam Sofer, as quoted in the Yad Elozor. Those who oppose to do metzitza by a tube say that the fact that the Chassam Sofer himself didn't put it in his book means that maybe it was just Horos Shor for this particular incident in Vienna, but you can't derive from it a general heter. So the current situation is that some poskim hold that you must do metzitza bepeh, otherwise you don't fulfill the requirement, and some say that you can do metzitza even with a tube as long as the purpose of sucking is fulfilled and it doesn't matter how you do it. Interestingly, Rav Vosner in Shevet HaLevi brings a story that once he attended a bris together with the Chazon Ish. They were neighbors, they lived in Bnei Brak together. And the Chazon Ish told Rav Vosner, and that's what he writes in his tshuva in Shevet HaLevi, Chazon Ish told him, you are lucky, you meaning the Chassidische Oiler, because Rav Vosner was one of the Talmidim of Chachme Lublin, you are still doing Metzitze Bepeh, and that's very nice, but we, meaning the Litvische world, already long ago stopped doing Metzitze Bepeh, and we do Metzitze Bekli. So that is a testimony by Rav Vosner, what the Chazon Ish told him. So it seems like lehaloche you can go either direction. It depends on your masoires, on your understanding of the reasons why to do metzitza, whether you must do it bepeh or not. So coming back to the issue of herpes, there was a big issue in New York. Two or three babies were infected by the same oil with herpes. One of them even died. And the local government in New York tried to forbid metzitza altogether. And the Chassidische world, that not only, like everyone, was for doing metzitza because it's part of the mitzvah, but they were for doing it bepeh, to continue to do bepeh. So there was a big argument, it even went to the court, and finally the ruling was that it's a mitzvah done for religious purposes, it's not a medical procedure, so if the parents agree to the procedure one way or the other, that is sufficient, and if they take the risk, they take the risk, and they didn't forbid it there. We in Israel have the same fight. All the medical establishments in Israel are opposed to doing metzitza altogether, but certainly not metzitza bepeh. And the question was, is really herpes a real danger? Because if it is, then even those who hold that you have to do metzitza bepeh, you're not allowed to endanger the baby. So I did a study on that, and I reviewed all the reports that have been published both in the States and in Israel, and it turned out that there are no direct clear evidence that the moyel doing it bepeh is the one responsible for the herpes cases. For many reasons. One is that the number of herpes infections in babies is almost equal to girls and to boys. And certainly, when a girl contracts herpes, it's not because of metzitza bepeh. It's obvious, right? So we see that someone who handles the baby, it can be a parent, it can be a nurse, it can be someone else who transmitted it. Why accuse the moyel? Now, if the moyel, and another point is, that there is a way to find who was responsible to transmit the herpes. And that can be done by a genetic testing, by DNA, testing the virus and seeing who has this particular virus in his mouth. Is it the moel? Is it the father? Is it the mother? Is it the nurse or someone else? And if we find that indeed doing the testing, it comes from the moel, then obviously this moel cannot do metzitza bepeh because it transmits herpes. So far, no one is willing to do the test for maybe obvious reasons, I mean governments and medical establishments. So there's no direct proof in any of the cases so far reported of herpes that it came from the moel. We have now currently a case in Israel where a baby was circumcised by a very notable moel in Bnei Brak, a very known moel, I won't mention names. And 2 weeks after the bris, the baby encountered herpes, which started in the back of him, not at the bris area, but in the other side of the body. And the moel was accused as being the one that transmitted it. Now this moel was already accused of transmitting herpes a few years ago. There were 2 cases that were related to him. I'm now chairing the committee of the chief rabbinate in Israel that licenses and supervises Moalim, and we discussed it with this particular Moel, and we didn't have direct evidence, but it looked circumstantially that 2 cases of his, it's probably him who does it. And therefore, we told him that he is not allowed to do metzitze bepeh. If the family agrees to metzitze with a tube, then obviously he can do the full bris. If the family insists to do metzitze bepeh, then he has to bring someone else who will do the metzitze for him, so that he will not do the metzitze. In this particular case, the moel and the parents testified to us that indeed someone else did it, not he. And yet, the baby contracted herpes. So certainly it's not coming from him. He didn't touch by mouth this baby. So to accuse him again that he did it is ridiculous. And also, it's unusual that it starts 2 weeks later, and that it starts not from the area where it should have been. So it seems like someone else did it.
Why don't you check if they
It wasn't checked, but if he didn't do it, there's no point to check. I mean, it's not him. So, when it started, the whole thing, Rabbi Yashiv was still alive, and I presented to him the data that I collected from all the reported cases and the analysis. And although it may happen, no one can claim that it can never happen, but it's very rare that it can happen, and so far no one was really proven to be the one, the moel who did it, except for 1 or 2 cases where it was repeated in several babies. So his psak was that we should continue to do metzitza bepeh unless the moel at the day of the bris is either sick, his temperature, or he doesn't feel well, or he has in his mouth sores. Even though we don't know that the sores are necessarily herpes, but if he has sores, then it may be a reason to contract, to infect the baby, and therefore he shouldn't do the metzitza bepeh, someone else should do the metzitza bepeh for those who insist to do metzitza bepeh.
Why shouldn't you use a mouthwash before metzitza?
Yeah, obviously they use mouthwash, but mouthwash doesn't exclude viruses. It can exclude bacteria, but it doesn't exclude viruses, so that is not helpful. If he is a carrier and if he is active, he will transmit it no matter what. So metzitza at the moment is obviously to be continued, whether by mouse or by tube, depends on the machloikis, and whoever insists that it should be bepeh, despite the fact that many poskim hold that by tube it's okay, then he should be at least known to be healthy and no sores, and if he isn't, someone else should do it.
So if you ignore Kabbalah... And
what?
If you ignore Kabbalah... It's a chavasa.
Right, but there are poskim who ignore Kabbalah, who say that by nigle, it doesn't matter how you do it, as long as you suck the blood. So it makes sense.
Can the moel be tested for herpes?
Well, he can be tested, but every one of us is carrier of herpes. So it won't be helpful, because the question is, if the day that he is doing the breeze, he's active. But if you test him, and he is a carrier of herpes, it doesn't mean anything. We all are carriers, and we don't transmit it. You have to be active at the time. So herpes, the virus sometimes becomes active all of a sudden, and then if it happened to be the day that it's active, he will infect. But you can't do it, you can't know it ahead of time. Another issue is anesthesia at the time of grace. We all, I assume, all in the room here, underwent breath without anesthesia when we were 8 days old. And Baruch Hashem, we are fine, and we survived it, and we don't remember it, and everything is okay. What happened in recent years is that from a medical point of view, not from the mitzvah point of view, it seems to be beneficial to be circumcised. And even goyim do circumcision for medical reasons. And who does it? Usually a very junior physician in the hospital, day one or two after the birth, before the baby goes home, a junior physician comes and does the operation of cutting away the orla. How does he do it? He does it without any experience, because he's a young doctor, and he does it in a medical way, which is stripping and cleaning and putting clamps, and it takes maybe 10-15 minutes for the procedure. And that is really very painful. If you look at experienced mohalim, by the way you say Jack Robinson, it's already finished. It's cut and everything is fine. So if you do it in the medical way, it really creates a lot of pain. So the medical establishment decided that you have to anesthetize the baby because the baby feels pain. And it's painful to him, even though he can't tell us, don't do it because it's painful, but it's painful. So what they do is they inject lidocaine or some other anesthetic material around the area of the aorta, and then the area becomes numb, and then when they cut, he doesn't feel it. However, the injection is painful. And if you calculate pain by an experienced moel, the pain caused by a quick cut without any clamps and any other measures that cause additional pain, because halachically you're not allowed to put a clamp, and you compare it to the injection, which you have to do in several sites, it's almost the same amount of pain. So if you're doing it in a medical way, that is less pain if you do it with an injection than if you cut it. But if you do it like a moel does it, so probably it's the net result is almost the same. So there's really no point to anesthetize for a bris done by a moel. However, there are parents who are very frightened and don't want their baby to be affected, and they insist that some anesthesia should be done.
When they use anesthesia, does the baby cry?
Sure.
So how do they know whether it's in pain or not?
Well, it depends how he cries. I mean, when you just open him up, he starts crying, right? Even if you didn't do yet anything. But it's a different cry than when you do something which is very painful. We know how to distinguish it. I don't have time to go into it, but there is a way. So it is clear that if we will allow an injection to anesthetize the area, it would mean that moelim can't do brisn, because a moel is not licensed to give an injection. So it would mean that it has to be done only by a physician, which we in Israel insist that it shouldn't be that way, because a physician sometimes does the cutting, but he doesn't do a bris milah. It's a different procedure. So in order to do it lehalocha right, we need a mohalim, but they can't give an injection. So there is an alternative, which is a cream, which is called emla, and there are different names to it in different countries. and you apply it about an hour before the bris, and that numbs, not totally, but numbs enough that the pain isn't significant when the bris is done. So the question was, are we allowed to use this anesthetic in order to reduce the suffering of the baby? So I presented this to Abel Yashiv, and he wanted to know the opinion of Rav Vosner, who was considered an expert in Hilchos Mila. So Rav Vosner pointed out to a tshuva by the Tzur Yaakov that says that you're not allowed to apply any anesthetics for several reasons. One is that there is a medrash that when Avraham Avinu did the first bris, when he was quite old, he did it to himself. Asher Nimol Avraham, he did it himself. And the Medrash says that there was a lot of tzar, and the fact that there was tzar added to the mitzvah. He did it, the Mesiros Nefesh, even though he had tzar. So that was one claim, that tzar is part of the milah. You have to have the tzar in order to fulfill the mitzvah. Another argument was that usually we say, lo ra'inu ena ra'ya. The fact that we didn't see it doesn't mean that it was forbidden. But the fact is that throughout the generations, no one used any anesthetic, even not a cream, for a bris milah. And the reason, says the Tzur Yaakov, is that they did know about a cream. The Gemara talks about a sam, but they didn't use it. So if they knew that there is such a cream and they didn't use it, that's a raya that you're not allowed to use. So said Rav Vosner, since there is a chiyuv to have tzar and the sam was known and yet not used, we cannot use it. So I asked him, what amount of tzar does the baby have to have? Is it a shiur chazonish of tzar? We were in Bnei Brak. Or can it be less tzar? So if you do with the injection, then there is no tzar at all, because it's totally numb. But if you put the emla or another type of cream, it reduces the tzar, but there's still tzar. So would it be sufficient? So he said, yes, but it's a way of a shinui, he's not sure, so he wanted me to go back to Abel Yashiv. So we discussed it with Abel Yashiv, who did not agree with the Tzur Yaakov. I don't have time now to go into the reasoning, but certainly the first one is something that has nothing to do with halacha. The fact that Avraham Avinu did it b'tzar doesn't mean that the milah has to be done b'tzar. He wanted an added schar, but this baby doesn't want an added schar. What is he in fault to have tzar and he doesn't understand what's going on? So there's no comparison to what Avraham Avinu did. And the sum that the Tzur Yaakov brings is a totally different sum. It's a sum that cuts. It's not a sum that anesthetizes. And really, we didn't know about such a sum until recently. So lo ra'inu eina ra'ya, really, because it didn't exist. If it would have been existed, maybe it would be permissible. And therefore he said that lechatchila we shouldn't do it because it's a shinui. We don't want to start with a shinui, even though halachically it may be accepted, but today we do this shinui, tomorrow we'll do another shinui, and the next day we'll do a shinui, which halachically is not accepted. So preferably not to do. But if the family insists on anesthesia, and if we won't supply them, they'll go to a doctor who will do it in a wrong way, not in a halachic bris milah, then it's preferable to keep their mind set and put this emla, and we're not violating any halacha, it's just a shinui, but that shinui can be permissible, and therefore if someone wants to do it, one can do it. Thank you.